almost falls off the chair. "Castillo?" he says. "Tomas Castillo was Garrett Tyson's partner?"
"Yup."
"How do you know that?" "Tyson was there the night I..."
"The night you shot Castillo?"
"Allegedly." Just sits back in his chair to let it all sink in.
"You good, dog?"
Quan says.
"Huh?"
"You looking a little shook over there. Should just tell him? Nothing to lose, right?" Just takes a quick peek around and leans forward. "Can I tell you something crazy?"
"I'm listening."
"Well, like a week before you... before Castillo died, dude arrested my ass. My girl was drunk and I was trying to get her home, but he thought I was carjacking her. Put me in cuffs and wouldn't let me say a word."
"So the motherfucker got his just desserts."
Quan cracks his knuckles. Justice takes in Quan's tough guy expression, an orange jumpsuit, as the power of his words and seeming lack of remorse settle into Justice's bones. Just leans forward again.
"Tell me why you did it, dog."
Quan's features harden.
"Why I did what?"
"Quan, I know you confessed. You don't have to act innocent with me."
"I don't know what you're talking about, man."
Quan crosses his arms.
"All right, then. Different approach."
"Okay, new question. Why would someone do what you're accused of doing?" Quan shrugs.
"If that's what someone's told to do, they do it."
"Who would tell someone to do that, though?" Quan turns away and just can see he's about to lose him again. But just really needs to know, because now there's a new question on the table. Who's to say Garrett Tyson's quickness to pull the trigger wasn't caused by seeing his partner killed by a black kid? It's no excuse, of course, but just knows the effects of trauma are real. He watched his dad lash out at his mom for years. Wait, forget that who would tell question. I just really need to understand, Quan. I got shot and Manny's dead because Garrett Tyson thought I had a gun. Now you're telling me he was there when you when his partner got shot?
Quan's eyes narrow. What you trying to say, man?
I'm not trying to say anything, Quan. Just put yourself in my shoes. All of this shit is foreign to me.
For a minute, nobody says anything, and just as sure his coming here was a mistake. But then Quan starts talking. Alright, listen up. Where I come from, resistance is existence, homie. Every day I woke up in my hood could have been my last. You want to survive? Get with some niggas who won't turn on you, and y'all do whatever it takes to stay at the top. You feel me? My dudes, they're like family to me. They've got my back as long as I have theirs. Somebody tells you to make a move, you make a move. No questions asked.
Just shakes his head. Not buying it, dog. Don't forget, I grew up right around the corner from you.
Last I checked, your way got you capped and Manny killed,
Quan says. Just can't really respond to that. I know you all about getting ahead and everything, Justice, but you gotta face reality at some point. These white people don't got no respect for us, dog. Especially the cops. All they protect and serve is their own interests. You just gonna continue to bend your knee after they prove that shit by killing your best friend?
Again, just as nothing.
Can't even say I was surprised when I heard, man.
Quan continues.
You and Manny were good dudes, and y'all still got a raw-ass deal. That's why I wanted to see you. Talk.
I got a counselor here, but I can't tell that white lady none of this shit. She won't get it.
Just nods.
You know what, Quan? I feel you.
And he really does. It's fucked up. There's no escaping the BMC,
Quan says. The BMC?
Yeah. Black man's curse. World's got diarrhea, and dudes like us are the toilet. Guess that's one way to put it. Let me tell you when I learned. My second time in juvie, I was 14. There was a 17-year-old rich white boy there, Sean. Dude had got up in the middle of the night and stabbed his dad like 8 times. Damn. Right? They tried to get him on an attempted murder charge, but homeboy's lawyer got some doctor to come in and say dude was sleepwalking. And the shit worked. Judge dropped the charge down to simple assault. Guy got 60 days at a youth development campus, then got to go home. You serious? Yup. Meanwhile, they locked my ass up for a year on a petty theft charge because it was my second offense. Prosecutor actually referred to me as a career criminal at the hearing. Quan shakes his head. I think that was probably the moment I gave up. Why try to do right if people will always look at me and assume wrong? Justice can't respond to that. He knows Quan committed actual crimes, whereas his only error was reaching to turn the music down. But just has to admit, he's thought that same thing. What is the point in trying to do right? So what do I do then, Matt? He asks, surprising even himself with the question. What's the alternative? He swallows the next thought. Winding up in jail doesn't seem like the way to go. Quan shrugs. Well, as a wise man once told me, the solution is twofold. First, you gotta use the power you already got, man. People fear dudes like us. When they fear you, they don't fuck with you. Feel me? Just doesn't feel quiet. But he nods anyway. Second, you need to get a crew to roll with. There's strength in numbers. Matter of fact, you should give Martell a call, Quan goes on. He's like a big brother to a lot of us. Taught us everything we know. This makes Justice's heart race. He knows exactly who Martell is and what he's about. Hello, Black Jihad? The last thing he wants is to get involved with some gang leader. Nah, man, it's cool. I've learned plenty from you. He peeks over his shoulder at the exit again. Quan grins. I'm gonna give you Trey's number. He'll put you in touch with Martell. You really don't have to do that, Quan. I promise you, I'm all right. It's hard out there by yourself, man. Martell gets it. Quan looks Just right in the eyes, and a stone drops into Just's gut. You'll be welcomed if you want in, he says. For real, dog. I'm good. Besides, I don't have anything to write with. I'm sure you'll remember the number until you get back to your phone. You ready? As soon as Quan recites the last digit, a guard Just failed to notice says, Time's up. The whole way back to his car, some of Quan's words run laps in Just's head. Resistance is existence. These white people don't got no respect for us. There's no escaping the black man's curse. It's exactly the kind of thinking Just tried to combat with the letters to Martin. But asking, what would Martin do, didn't help, did it? That's why he stopped writing them. There's one thing Quan said that Just can't dispute. Doing things Just's way got him and his best friend shot. Yeah, Quan's in jail, but at least he's alive. That's more than can be said for Manny. Before sticking the key in the ignition, Just grabs his cell phone from the center console. Before he can change his mind, he punches Trey's number in. Chapter 18. Turns out not using the number is harder than Just anticipates, especially when he's alone with nothing but memories of his homeboy. He's hanging out after school in Doc's classroom to avoid making the call a few days later when SJ busts through the door like she's being chased by rabid dogs. The sight of her punches the air right out of Just's lungs. They haven't really talked since the funeral a couple weeks ago, but seeing her so... SJ? Well, it centers him in a way he doesn't expect. You guys!
Yes, Sarah Jane?
Says Doc, the picture of calm. Do you have any idea what's going on right now?
Can't say we do.
Doc replies. Where's your TV remote?
Doc pulls the remote from his desk drawer and passes it to her. Once the TV is on and turned to the right channel, Jess finds it hard to breathe for a different reason. There, on the screen, big and bold and bright and blatant, is a picture from Jared's Halloween political statement turned brush with death. Of course, everyone else, Blake the Klansman included, has been cropped out of the version making national news. It just shows Justice McAllister as thug extraordinaire.
We've heard about his grades, SAT scores, and admission to an Ivy League school, the anchor says. But a picture speaks a thousand words. This kid grew up in the same neighborhood as the young man accused of murdering Garrett Tyson's partner, more or less on a whim.
You gotta be kidding me, Just says. People all over the country have rallied to the cause, wearing Justice for Jam t-shirts, Jam being Justice and Manny, and riding with their music loud from 1219 until 1221 every Saturday afternoon to commemorate the time of the argument between them and Garrett. But if there's one thing Just knows from the Shamar Carson and Tavarius Jenkins cases, it really doesn't take more than a photo to sway mass opinion. SJ crosses her arms, and the three of them lean in to hear the analysis of some anti-gang violence pundit who appears on a split screen with the anchor.
I mean, it's obvious this kid was leading a double life, the guy is saying. You know what they say, Stephen. You can remove the kid from the thug life, but you can't remove the thug life from the kid.
SJ, you son of a bitch.
Doc, shh.
SJ, this is blatant defamation of character.
Pundit,
there are all these reports about how great a kid Emmanuel Rivers was, but if this was the company he kept, well, I really don't know, Stephen.
Just shakes his head. Unbelievable. Stephen,
we've received some reports that this other young man you mentioned, Quan Banks, is a relative of Emmanuel Rivers. You know anything about that?
Pundit,
it wouldn't surprise me if both boys had ties to Banks. Who's to say Officer Tyson didn't see them on the scene the night his partner was murdered right before his eyes? You have to put the pieces together, Stephen. Garrett Tyson and Tommy Castillo respond to a complaint about loud music. There's a Range Rover parked in the driveway of the offending domicile, and some thug kid pops out of the back seat with a shotgun. Now that we're learning about all these connections, who's to say it wasn't the same Range Rover Emmanuel Rivers was driving? Officer Tyson says these boys pointed a gun at him, and after seeing this picture, I can't say I'd put it past them.
As the news cuts to another segment, SJ turns the television off. Doc looks too furious to speak. All Just can do is put his head in his hands.
I think Jared, SJ says. If that cretin wouldn't have...
SJ's phone rings, and Just lifts his head. When she sees the screen, her eyebrows jump to the ceiling.
Who is it?
Just says. SJ holds out the phone. Douche Nugget is the name displayed.
Speak of the spawn of Satan, and he shall make his presence known.
Jared? Just asks.
Yep. I'll take it in the hallway.
As she pulls the door closed, Just hears her yell,
Seen the news today, asshole?
Doc throws an arm around Just's shoulder and gives him a shake.
Wanna talk about it?
This is some bullshit, Doc. Just kicks the desk beside him and it topples onto its side.
Yep.
Doc writes it.
Is it not enough that Manny's dead, man? It's like these people want Garrett to get away with it.
Just shakes his head.
I knew I should have said no to Jared's idea. Definitely shouldn't have let him take that picture. But I ignored how I was feeling about it because I was trying to be like...
He grits his teeth.
Like Martin?
Just nods.
You still writing your letters?
Nah, man.
Why not?
Just shrugs. Don't see the point. My experiment obviously didn't work. Don't want to think about it anymore.
I see.
You know what's crazy, Doc?
What's that?
I've got one memory of the day everything happened. Sharp pains in my chest and shoulder, and then not being able to breathe. In that moment, when I thought I was dying, it hit me. Despite how good a dude Martin was, they still killed him, man.
Doc nods. I know. But I don't think knowing he'd be killed would have changed the way he lived, Jess. He challenged the status quo and helped bring about some change. Pretty sure that was his goal. Wouldn't you agree?
All I know is he and Manny are dead, and I'm being cast as the bad guy.
I get that. Look, Jess, people need the craziness in the world to make some sort of sense to them.
That idiot pundit would rather believe you and Manny were thugs than believe a 20-year veteran cop made a snap judgment based on skin color. He identifies with the cop. If the cop is capable of murder, it means he's capable of the same. He can't accept that.
Well, that's his hang-up. Shouldn't be my problem.
You're right. But it is your problem because you're affected by it. I know it's shitty, excuse my language, and it's definitely not fair. But these people have to justify Garrett's actions. They need to believe you're a bad guy who got what he deserved in order for their world to keep spinning the way it always has. How does that help me, Doc?
It doesn't.
Just shakes his head again. Trey's number flashes through his mind.
So why even try to be good?
You can't change how other people think and act. But you're in full control of you. When it comes down to it, the only question that matters is this. If nothing in the world ever changes, what type of man are you gonna be? A dense silence settles over the room. But just as Jess is about to speak again, SJ comes back in. For a minute, she just stands with her back against the doorframe and her eyebrows furrowed. SJ, Doc says, everything all right? She snaps out of the daze.
Ask Clown Christensen seems to be shedding his douchey skin, you guys.
Huh? From Jess. SJ comes over and drops down in the empty seat next to him. She turns to look at him, right in his eyes.
He wants to clear this up,
she says. Wait. Jess shakes his head. Back up. I'm confused.
Jared, that was him on the phone.
Got that part.
Well, he's pissed about what they did with the Halloween picture. Says his dad is calling some people so they'll show the entire shot, Blake's Klan idiocy included.
Just doesn't know what to say. Isn't this the same guy who was about to press charges against Manny for the beatdown he got? Why the hell is he being Mr. Noble all of a sudden?
What do you think is up with him?
I honestly couldn't tell you. He seemed a little disillusioned. Like I picked up the phone and called him an asshole, and it sounded like he just kind of crumpled.
I can't even disagree with you, SJ, he said. This is all my fault. I had to look at my phone to check who I was talking to.
Jess's jaw clenches.
So now he wants to be the Great White Hope. Correct me if I'm wrong, Doc interrupts.
But Manny and Jared were good friends, right?
Jess shrugs.
Yeah, I guess.
It occurred to either of you that maybe the guy doesn't want his friend's name dragged through the mud any more than you do?
Neither SJ nor Jess responds.
Cut Jared some slack. He's grieving too.
Jess's eyes drift across the room to where Manny and Jared used to sit side by side in social evil.
Yeah, okay, Doc.
I need to hit the men's room.
Doc stands.
Excuse me.
When Doc leaves, Jess's awareness of SJ's presence kicks up a notch. He looks at her hands on the desk and sees that her nails are painted green.
It makes him smile. During one of their tournament prep sessions at her house, they'd taken a break to make a snack run to the local drugstore. Just before they checked out, SJ asked Jess what his favorite color was. When he told her green, she ran off and came back with a bottle of nail polish.
Justice clears his throat.
So,
wait, I need to say something.
Okay.
She turns to face him.
I owe you an apology for failing.
She picks at her nails.
After the tournament, with no explanation, I'm sorry.
Oh. Some emotion he doesn't recognize surges in his chest.
He's on dangerous ground, and he knows it, especially considering the way she's looking at him.
You, mind explaining now?
I panicked?
You panicked.
Well, there was Mello, and I didn't know where you stood with her or how I fit. Anyway, point is, it won't happen again.
Okay.
I mean it, Jess. I want to be here for you. Anything you need, a friend, a hug, whatever.
Thanks, Jess.
Jess bumps her with his shoulder.
I really appreciate it.
She nods. So we're good?
Yeah.
Jess smiles.
We're good.
VP released for Rabble Rousing by Sonia Kittris for the Tribune. Julian Rivers, executive vice president of Davidson Wells Financial Corporation, has stepped down from his position following troubling reports of his involvement in the Justice for Jam movement. According to CEO Chuck Wallace, photographs of Mr. Rivers on the front lines of an Atlanta march that shut down traffic for hours last week triggered the loss of several high-profile clients and approximately $80 million in revenue for the asset management firm. In a press release yesterday afternoon, Wallace stated, "While we respect the gravity of the tragic loss of a child, involvement in publicly disruptive activity is grounds for investigation and potential dismissal. Mr. Rivers has been a tremendous asset at Davidson Wells for well over 19 years, and while we hate to see him go, we've mutually agreed to part ways." Rivers' son, Emmanuel, was killed in a shooting during a dispute over loud music in late January. A trial date for the shooter, who was indicted last month, has not yet been set.
Chapter 19. There's not a whole lot Jess is sure of these days, but he knows he shouldn't be in this seat at the back of the number 87 bus right now. If it weren't for the newspaper article in his pocket, he'd be studying for finals or hanging out with SJ. But all he's thought about over the past few days is how sad Manny's parents were when they invited him over to tell him they were moving. Doc gave Jess a copy of the article about Mr. Julian stepping down the morning it was released. His first thought? Instead of Sonia Kittris, the name on the article should be None Your Business. Manny's parents more or less sponsored the Atlanta chapter of the Justice for Jam movement, so of course they participated in the local marches. It wasn't their fault the one they were photographed at overflowed onto the highway, blocking all northbound and southbound lanes. The day the Riverses shared their relocation plans, they also told Jess that Mr. Julian had received an ultimatum. Basically, sever all ties with that so-called movement or clear out that corner office. In so many words. Mr. Julian told Jess he calmly explained the meaning of civil disobedience before removing his framed degrees from the wall. Jess is on the number 87 bus, the final bus in the commute from Oak Ridge to Wynwood Heights, because what Quan said, there's no escaping the black man's curse, has been echoing in his head since he left the Riverses' house. He has no idea where else to go or who else to turn to. SJ's great, but not for this. And while he could go to Doc, just doesn't really want to hear any more stay good even though the world craps on you advice. Mama would throttle Jess if she knew where he was going. Everybody in the neighborhood knows who Martell is, but frankly, she hasn't been any help lately either. Every time he calls or stops by, she brings up SJ. All Jess knows is he's got this shitty feeling in his gut, kind of like somebody crawled into his stomach and ran a cheese grater over the inside. He needs to get rid of it somehow. Talk to somebody who gets what he's feeling because they felt it too. You know who gets it? Deuce Diggs. Jess has been listening to his music a lot since he woke up without a best friend. There's one track he's had on repeat since the article dropped. Turn on the news, another black man slain. They say it's okay, save your voice, don't complain. This isn't about race, so stop using that excuse. Now look at this funny picture of Obama in a noose. See how colorblind we are. You're not really black to me. Underneath where it matters, we both bleed red, you see. So put away that race card. It ain't 1962. There's no more segregation. Isn't that enough for you? But of course, Jess doesn't have access to Deuce Diggs. You can't just call him up and say, hey, dog, I'm feeling what you're feeling. Can we talk? Jess remembers what Quan said about the neighborhood guys being like family.
that Martell would get it, that he'd be welcomed if he wanted in. That's really why he's on this bus right now. He's sick of feeling alone. The first thing to cross Jess's mind as he steps off the bus is the irony of looking for solace in the place he was anxious to get away from. As someone drives by in a brand new Benz, he also feels a twinge of guilt over refusing to drive his new car to Martell's house. How can he be mad at white people for profiling when he's doing the same damn thing they do?
Lock your doors. Hide your valuables.
He even left Manny's watch at home. This is the shit that has to be remedied. He hangs a left onto Wynwood Street and spots the gunmetal Range Rover Trey said would be in the driveway. Despite it being an older model than the one Manny drove, seeing it makes Just want to make a run for it. He should turn back. He really should. Turn back and go home to his mahogany desk and school-issued MacBook. But he doesn't. It's not until Just starts up the driveway that he notices the three guys sitting on the porch. Trey is there, plus white boy Brad, and the dude who had the gun during the Halloween disaster.
Oh ho, if it isn't Smarty Pants,
Brad says. The gun toter, Just doesn't remember his name, smiles.
Sup, Justice, he says. Great to see you, buddy, old pal.
The others laugh. Just's eyes immediately drop to the guy's waistband. He can see the bulge of the gun handle beneath dude's shirt. It gives him a chill. He tries to pull himself together. Sup, y'all? They all laugh again. Trey gives Just the same kind of once-over he did at the Halloween party all those months ago. He smiles that sneery, creeper smile, and Just feels like his guts are about to make an appearance inside his boxer briefs. Trey shouts,
Hey, Martell, you got company?
Over his shoulder at the screen door, and the second Just steps onto the porch, a voice calls out from inside.
Come on in, young brother.
Even though his heart is about to explode, Just pulls the door open and enters the house he's only ever eyed warily due to rumors about all the drugs and guns hidden inside. He follows a short hallway lined with what appear to be African relics, tribal masks, framed hieroglyphics, and a silhouette painting of Nefertiti. He can tell by the cylindrical headpiece that reminds him of the flat-top haircuts some of the NBA players are trying to bring back. There's similar art all over the walls of the living room. Just as sure this house could win the world record for largest collection of ancient Egyptian paraphernalia. His gaze roams the space until it lands on a youngish, bearded black man in a dashiki shirt and kufi hat. He's sitting cross-legged in a papasan chair with a kente cloth cushion. Most notable is the black tracking device strapped to his ankle. So this is why a dude couldn't meet Just at a coffee shop.
Welcome, the guy says. You must be Justice.
Yep, that's me. Martell. He sticks out a hand and Just walks over to shake it.
Pleasure to meet you.
Likewise. Just looks around again and then sticks his hands in his pockets. Though Just has known of the black jihad leader since middle school, Martell in person is not what he expected. He honestly has no idea what to say to the guy. The silence is beginning to morph into something straight up menacing.
Cool art.
Martell smiles.
I like to surround myself with reminders of ancient Kemet, so the boys and I never forget our imperial roots.
You know anything about that?
Just shrugs. I've studied it a bit, but I don't know a whole lot.
Sorry.
No need to apologize.
Martell tenses fingers beneath his chin.
You'll learn, young brother. You'll learn. The Europeans succeeded in denigrating and enslaving peoples of African descent, but there's royal blood flowing through your veins. You hear me?
Justice nods and swallows.
Yes, sir. People across the diaspora have been treated as inferior for so long. Most of us have habituated to the lie of white superiority. But never forget, Martell goes on, your ancestors survived a transatlantic journey, built this nation from the ground up, and maintained a semblance of humanity, even when the very conditions of their existence suggested they were less than human. Jihad is the act of striving, persevering. That is your legacy, young brother. This country belongs to you.
As Just listens to Martell's voice, he can feel himself relaxing. He doesn't know if it's the voice itself, or what it's saying, or the art, or the incense, or the atmosphere, but something about Martell and his house makes Just feel looser than he's felt in a while. He looks at Martell, who's been watching him, reading him, studying him, he can tell, ever since he stepped into the room, and, yeah, Martell does get it. Quan said Just would be welcomed, and that's exactly how he feels. The disarming effect gives him vertigo.
So what can I do for you, Justice?
Martell asks. Before he knows it, Just is telling Martell all the stuff he can't talk to anyone else about. How it felt to be profiled, the Martin experiment and how it failed, how alone he's felt and how furious he is, how much he misses his homeboy. Martell listens intently, stroking his beard, lowering his eyes when Just gets to Manny's death, narrowing them when he hears about Mr. Julian's job. By the time Just finishes getting it all out, he's sprawled on his back across the giant ankh at the center of Martell's Egyptian rug. He feels empty, in a good way. Martell gets up without a word and disappears into what must be the kitchen. Just lets his head fall to the left. That's when he sees the sawed-off shotgun tucked beneath the edge of the coffee table. It smacks him like a battering ram. He shouldn't be here. No matter how chill Martell seems, the dude is a criminal. Hello? House arrest anklet? Those guys outside? They're the same ones who threatened to shoot Manny's old friends. What the hell is Just doing here? There's a tap on his foot, so Just looks up. Martell is squatting beside him with a glass in his hand. Just sits up and takes a drink. The first gulp is too big. He doesn't know why he didn't expect the thing to be alcoholic. He coughs as what feels like the flames of hell run down his esophagus through his chest and into his stomach. Martell laughs. Just can tell it's a laugh of delighted amusement. It makes sense that the neighborhood guys without dads flock to Martell. So, the illusion wore off, huh? Seeing some truth now? He says. Just nods, and that feeling of defeat returns to his chest now that the fire from the liquor is gone.
You ready to strike back?
Justice knew this question would come. What he isn't ready for, though, is the fear that seems to have elbowed its way in front of his fury. Is he ready to strike back? It's definitely not what Manny would want. But the reason he's even here is because Manny is gone. Justice looks up at Martell. There's no anxiety in this dude's face. No pressure. No fear. Just lifts his glass to his lips again. Trey bursts into the room with Gun Guy and White Boy Brad on his heels. Yo, check this out, he says, passing a cell phone to Martell. They all crowd around.
Brad, that's the fool you punched at that Halloween party, right? With the KKK shit on?
Gun Guy asks.
Yep, Brad says. That's him. Homeboy says you whooped his ass a few months ago, Justice.
Martell hands Just the phone. There, in big, bold letters above a picture of Blake Benson, Justice McAllister's violent past, a former victim, speaks out.
Damn, smarty pants,
Trey says, shaking Justice's shoulder.
Didn't know you had it in you. Hell yeah, bruh,
from Gun Guy.
You scrap like this dude say you do, you can roll with us anytime.
For real. You more like us than I realized,
Brad says. That does it for Justice. I gotta go. He scrambles to his feet and makes a break for the door, refusing to turn around when they call out after him.
Let him go.
He hears from Martell on the way out. Chapter 20. Mrs. Friedman looks so shocked to see Justice standing on a doorstep. He peeks over his shoulder to make sure there's not a ghost or something behind him.
Justice?
Hey, Mrs. F. Is Sarah Jane home?
Sure, come in, come in.
As Mrs. F. stands there with her eyes popping out of her head, Just thinks maybe he shouldn't have just shown up with no notice. Not that he made a conscious decision to do that. He got back to school from Martell's, hopped in his car, and let his instincts lead. This is where he ended up. I should have called, he says. I'm sorry.
No, no, that's not it at all. I'm just... Well, we really missed you around here.
They missed him?
SJ's up in her room, but do you mind saying hello to Neil? He'll be thrilled to see you.
Sure. Mrs. F. leads him around to the living room where Mr. Friedman is kicked back in his recliner, watching reruns of the Final Four.
Neil, look who's here,
she says. When Mr. Friedman sees Just, he sits bolt upright.
Justmeister!
Hey, Mr. F.
It's really you!
Mr. Friedman jumps up to hug Just, who winces a little from the pressure on his shoulder.
How are you? We're so glad to see you, son.
I can see that. The Friedmans laugh. Just swallows. It's a little overwhelming, all this love.
Sarah's in her room if you want to head up, Justice,
Mrs. F. says. Thank you. And thanks for the warm welcome. Promise I'll call first next time.
Oh, don't be silly.
Just smiles and turns to head upstairs.
Hey, Justmeister.
If you need anything, anything at all, I mean it. Don't hesitate to call us, all right? Mr. F. says from behind him. At first, Just recoils. If there's one thing he can't handle right now, it's pity. But as he looks over his shoulder into the faces of SJ's parents, he knows this is different. He clears his throat. Thanks so much, sir. It really means a lot to me. You betcha, kiddo.
Okay, we've embarrassed ourselves enough, Mrs. F. says. Go on up.
As Just climbs, he gets nervous. What if SJ isn't as cool with him dropping in as her parents were? What if she's busy? What if she's asleep? What is he even going to say to her? The door is cracked, and he can hear what sounds like NPR and Carrie Underwood playing simultaneously inside SJ's room. Typical. He knocks. Come in. She's stretched out on the bed in her brass-prep lacrosse shorts and a T-shirt, with an open calculus book in her lap. When she sees it's him, she sits up just like her dad did, wearing the same expression her mom had. It makes him smile. Hey, he says.
Hey,
she scrambles around for a second like she can't figure out what to do. Shuts a calc book, sets it aside, and swings her legs around so she's sitting on the edge of the bed.
Oh!
She grabs a remote from the nightstand and points it at the speakers attached to her computer on the desk. NPR and Carrie go quiet.
So, you're here.
Just laughs. That's what your parents said.
Oh, God, did they totally attack you? I'm so sorry.
She shakes her head.
You're literally all they talk about these days. I would have warned you if I'd known you were coming.
Just laughs again.
It's all good. Actually, felt pretty nice.
She smiles.
Wanna sit?
Points to the empty space beside her. He sits so close that their shoulders and legs are touching. She's warm.
So, what brings you to La Casa de Friedman, Mr. McAllister?
She nudges his knee with her own. He turns to look at her. You?
Me?
Yeah, He looks away.
Well, everything okay, Jess?
She touches his forearm just past his wrist, and the memory of handcuffs overwhelms him even all these months later. His eyes drop to her hands, and he feels a weight slip off his shoulders. They're chipped now, but her nails are still painted his favorite color. Just stands, pulls SJ up, and wraps her in a hug that lifts her off her feet.
Okay,
she says.
He inhales a whiff of her fruity shampoo.
I almost joined a gang today, he says.
Huh?
I almost joined a gang.
He puts it down. Remember the guys I told you about from the Halloween party? You mean the ones who threatened to shoot you?
Yeah. I went to see their leader.
You what?
I was thinking about, joining their crew.
She just gapes at him. They both sit back on the bed, and he tells her about visiting Quan in juvie and the sequence of events that led him to Martell's doorstep. At some point, he starts crying, which he'd normally be embarrassed about, but he's not because it's the best he's felt since,
since before he can remember.
Granted, part of feeling so good probably has to do with being wrapped in SJ's arms with his head on her shoulder. Just has no idea when that happened, but here they are. He can imagine Manny calling him a punk for letting her hold him while he cries like a big-ass baby, but instead of making him sad, the thought makes him smile. He can also imagine Manny saying, "Took you long enough, fool." After a few minutes of silence, SJ lets him go, and he sits up.
Thanks for that.
He smiles at her. She doesn't smile back.
You okay?
Justice, do you like me?
Huh?
SJ clasps her hands in her lap.
Like, I know you're going through a lot right now.
But, he says.
She looks at him.
I can't keep doing this to myself, Jess.
What are you talking about, S?
She sighs.
Okay, this is the thing. I've had a crush on you since 10th grade.
For real?
Yes. At first that's all it was. Didn't expect anything to come of it. But then last semester, we started talking more and spending more time together, and it, like, evolved.
Just doesn't know what to say.
Problem is, I don't really know how to read you. Sometimes it's like you're into me, but other times you're kind of withdrawn. Sometimes you look at me in a way that makes me want to put the world on a platter and hand it to you. But other times, you won't look at me at all.
Damn,
As much as I enjoy your friendship and company, I can't keep giving myself over to this hope we'll become something more. I need to know where you stand, so tell me the truth.
She looks him right in the eye.
Do you like me, Jess?
He gulps.
Oh my God, you totally don't, huh? I didn't say, you hesitated.
Jess peers down at his brown hands and sees Manny's watch.
You know what? It's fine, she says. We can still be friends.
Yes, I like you.
She glares at him.
Don't just say it to shut me up, Justice. I'm not. I do like you, I swear. More than I've ever liked any girl.
Why do I feel like there's a but?
He sighs. Mellow, right? She says.
What? No. Mellow and I are done. As in never gonna happen again.
So what is it? Is it me? No, it's...
He looks around the room. Anywhere but at her.
It's complicated.
Just forget it.
Wait, no. It's now or never, dog.
Manny says in his head. Just turns to face her fully.
S, I'm sorry for confusing you. You're right. I never said how I felt, 'cause I was scared too.
She fiddles with her hands and doesn't respond. Just takes a deep breath.
This is the thing, he says.
My mom, she's not real keen on me, dating girls who aren't African American.
SJ draws back, and then her head cocks to one side.
Really? Yup. It's been since I was little, but she's gotten more adamant about it since...
He cuts off. Since the shooting? SJ says.
Yeah.
She sighs.
But
I don't care anymore, Just says.
Huh?
About what she thinks. I don't care. SJ lifts an eyebrow and crosses her arms.
And I'm the Easter Bunny.
Just laughs. Okay, I care, but...
Just takes in her face, sees what he'd be passing up.
I can't let it stop me, he says. Life is too short. She bites her lip. It drives Just absolutely crazy.
Let me make it clear right now, he says.
I like you, Sarah Jane. No matter my mom's opinion, you mean a lot to me, and if you'll have me, I'd love to take you out sometime.
Her eyes narrow.
Like on a date.
I know, numbnuts.
She rolls her eyes and smiles.
You've never called me Sarah Jane before.
He grins. She blushes. Can't lie. It's real fun making your cheeks all red, he says.
Shut up.
She punches him. It makes him laugh and want to kiss her.
So? What's up? We doing this?
She covers her face.
Will you stop making me blush?
Nope.
Ugh.
She huffs and drops her hands.
You're all in?
I'm all in, girl.
Her eyes narrow for a second, and then...
Okay.
She smiles again. Just shakes his head.
Had to make me sweat for it, huh?
Just returning the favor.
Touché. A beat passes, and then...
Can I tell you something?
She says.
You mean there's more?
Shut up, this is serious.
Okay. And now he's nervous. She takes a really deep breath and shifts her gaze across the room.
Seeing you with all those tubes in your body was probably the lowest moment of my life, Jess. To think I spent all that time being stupid, then almost lost you?
She shakes her head.
I felt the same way when I saw you at the funeral.
Silence. Then.
Justice?
Yes, Sarah Jane?
Can we agree not to be that stupid again?
He smiles and drapes an arm around her shoulders. Sounds like a plan to me. Transcript from Nightly News, May 21st.
Anchor. Good evening, and welcome to the Channel 2 Nightly News. In our top story tonight, investigators say a fire at the home of former Atlanta police officer Garrett Tyson was deliberately set. Investigator. Arson was our initial suspicion due to the number of threatening phone calls and letters Mrs. Tyson has received during her husband's detainment. We're now able to confirm that this fire was started from the outside. Cuts to picture of house's charred remains. Anchor, B.O. Police have apprehended three teenage boys who were seen in the area on the night of the incident. Beverly Tyson, Garrett's wife, sustained multiple second-degree burns, leaving her in serious condition. Anchor continued. Tyson's trial in connection with the January shooting that left one teenager dead and another wounded is set to begin approximately 5 weeks from today. More on this story as it continues to develop.
Chapter 21.
For the most part, Just isn't surprised when a pair of cops approach him and Mama after Brass Prep's commencement ceremony. Since Blake's Justice Assaulted Me stunt fell flat, even the pundits were smart enough to ignore a kid photographed in a KKK robe, Just figured it was only a matter of time before he got accused of something else. And he was right. Not 12 hours after news broke that the fire at Garrett Tyson's house was set by someone outside it, the same newspeople who instigated Thuggate were speculating about Justice's involvement in the arson plot. Despite having nothing to do with it, for 4 days now, he's been waiting for someone, cop, reporter, angry mob, to come after him. Just sucks that he's still in his cap and gown, surrounded by his classmates and their families, when someone does.
Justice McAllister? The female of the pair says. She's black,
slacks and a button-down, badge on her belt.
Yes?
I'm Detective Rosalind Douglas, and this is Officer Troy. She points to the white guy in uniform. You mind if we ask you a few questions? Mama steps forward and crosses her arms. I'm his mother, and he's a minor. What can I do for you, officers? We mean your son no harm, ma'am, says Officer Troy. Just have a few queries. I don't give my consent.
Detective.
Ma'am, your son is 17 years of age, and therefore an adult, according to Georgia criminal law. My son isn't a criminal, so that law doesn't apply to him.
The detective sighs and looks around before taking a step forward and lowering her voice.
Ma'am, we know this is a big day for your son. We're trying not to make a scene here. If he's willing to cooperate and answer a few questions for us, we might be able to avoid this going any further than it has to.
So let me guess, Mama says. You're a good cop, and Whitey over there is bad?
Ma, stop, Just says. Let's just hear them out so we can leave. Do you officers have any idea of the kind of hell my boy's been through at the hands of people like you? He's been falsely accused and unlawfully held under arrest. He's lost his best friend. He's been shot,
Detective.
We're well aware of your son's background, Ms. McAllister. Our goal is to make this as painless as possible.
Just, what's this about?
I did not say you could talk to these people, Justice.
Ma, if they want to treat me like an adult, I'm going to act like one.
She doesn't say anything. Just steps around her and looks each cop in the eye.
You were saying, officers?
The detective nods as the white cop pulls out a notepad.
We appreciate your cooperation, Mr. McAllister.
Justice almost laughs.
Detective, on the night of May 20th, there was a fire at the home of Garrett and Beverly Tyson. The blaze was started at around 11:45 p.m. You know anything about that?
Just shrugs.
Only what I've seen on the news.
The detective's eyes narrow, and Justice wonders if he's being too nonchalant. He's telling the truth, of course, but they obviously don't know that.
Detective Douglas examines Justice's face, which makes him feel like a cockroach under a magnifying glass.
Will you excuse us for a moment?
She says, gesturing to the officer.
Sure.
The moment they step away, Mama rounds on Just.
I don't appreciate you speaking to me like that in front of those police officers. You should have let me handle it.
No offense, but I don't think this is something you could handle, Mama.
Well, if you would have kept your mouth shut, you realize once they said I don't need your consent, refusing to talk would have made it look like I had something to hide, right? I turned 18 in 3 weeks and head to college in 10. You can't protect me forever.
Mama's jaw drops, but before she has a chance to respond, the cops come back.
Okay, Justice, the detective says.
So he's Justice now, huh?
This is the deal. We arrested three young men caught on camera siphoning gasoline from cars in a Walmart parking lot near the Tyson home. Two of them, Officer Troy passes her the notepad, Trey Philly and Bradley Mathers, she reads, named you as an accomplice.
Just shakes his head.
Of course it was Black Jihad. Just can't believe he considered joining up with those fools.
I promise I had nothing to do with it, Detective.
She nods.
Well, we're hesitant to believe these guys. For one, they've both tried to implicate innocent parties before. For two, the third young man did not mention you, which, considering the circumstances, is a little odd.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you a series of yes or no questions. Just answer truthfully, and this should go pretty fast.
Just nods.
Were you aware of an arson plot involving the home of Garrett Tyson?
No.
Have you had any contact with Trey Philly or Bradley Mathers in the past 2 months?
Yes.
Mama gasps.
Just as sure she knows both of these clowns by name, and the cops exchange another glance.
How many times have you had contact with either of these boys in the past 2 months?
Once.
And what was the nature of this contact?
Justice gulps.
I went to meet someone, and they were there.
Who were you meeting?
If they're not connected to the arson, does it matter?
Mama cuts in.
The detective clears her throat.
Just is so relieved he could kiss Mama.
Detective Douglas continues. Did you have any contact with either Trey Philly or Bradley Mathers on the night of May 20th?
Absolutely not. Haven't seen or spoken to either of those guys since April 20th.
Officer Troy's eyebrows rise.
That's pretty specific.
It was a pretty memorable day. What was memorable about it? Detective Douglas asks. Something unrelated to what we're talking about?
Just can feel Mama's gaze burning into him.
Where were you on the night of May 20th?
The detective goes on.
I can assure you it wasn't anywhere near those guys or that fire.
Is there someone who can verify your whereabouts?
Yeah, I can, Mama says. He was with me.
Just couldn't leave it at that. He knows he could.
Yes, he can tell the cops are suspicious, but he knows that to dig deeper, they would need a warrant.
But lying to the police after everything he's been through?
Nah. You're getting confused, Ma. I wasn't with you. We went to visit Daddy's grave on the 21st, not the 20th.
And this is true.
But on May 20th, I was at my girlfriend's house. We were celebrating her parents' 20th wedding anniversary.
Mama says nothing.
I see, Detective Douglas says. Would your girlfriend happen to be around here to verify that?
Justice looks past her and the officer at the parting crowd.
She would, he says. She and her mom are headed right this way. Mama doesn't say a word the entire trip home. When they pull into the driveway and she tries to get out, Justice reaches over and pulls her door shut. He locks it.
Oh, so you're holding me hostage now?
You have something you want to say to me, Ma?
I certainly don't.
You sure about that?
I don't have anything to say to you, Justice.
Well, I have some things to say to you. That's funny. I've learned more about my son in the past 2 hours than I've known in 4 years, and now he wants to talk to me?
Mama, tell me something. Did you ever plan to let your mama know about this girlfriend of yours?
Ma, I can understand you not wanting to bring up your recent contact with the neighborhood gangbangers, but if you actually care about this girl, seems to me like you would have at least mentioned...
You know why I didn't tell you anything, Mama?
She doesn't respond.
I'm not saying keeping it from you was the right thing to do, but I knew no matter how happy I was, you would have had something negative to say. You reacted in the parking lot by frowning at Mr. Friedman's hand like it was diseased.
I'm not shaking a white man's hand, Justice. Not after what the other one did to you.
But what does that solve, Mama? Mr. Friedman and Garrett Tyson are totally different people.
Mama crosses her arms and turns to the window.
Just shakes his head. All my life, you've pushed me to be and do my absolute best. That's what SJ brings out of me, Ma. She makes me better.
Don't you sit over there and tell yourself that lie, Justice.
It's not a lie.
It certainly is. I taught you a long time ago, only person can make you better is you.
Justice grips the steering wheel.
Mama, if not for her, I don't know that I would have made it through this school year. For 10 months now, people have been trying to tear me down. SJ worked harder than anybody to make sure I stayed standing.
Whether you believe it or not, she brings out the best in me. When I'm with her, I want to overcome everything.
I get what you're saying, son. But there are plenty of brilliant black women who can do the same.
Just sighs. She doesn't get it at all.
Ma, SJ is Jewish, he says.
Manny said it to him, and it's a valid point, isn't it?
I know you have issues with white folks, but her people have been through hardship, too. Doesn't matter, son. You can't see Jewish in her skin color. You tried to help that other girl and wound up in handcuffs, and her daddy is black, ain't he? If it looks white, it's white in this world.
But it's not that simple.
Yeah, it is. You just refuse to accept it. I sent you to that school so you'd have a chance at the best education. But with this foolishness you got in your head now, I'm wondering if that was such a good idea.
So what you're saying is after a lifetime of getting picked apart because of my skin color, I should dismiss the girl I love because of hers.
Mama turns